You know, you might say that you're poor because you don't have any money in your bank account, but if your quality of life, you're living in affluence and not working, then you're rich.
That'd be funny to have a podcast called Memento Mori and say, "We are live on Memento Mori."
I was thinking, I saw a video of, it was a guy, he was a Russian soldier, and he had just gotten back into Russia, and he was saying how to survive the war. And while he was like giving this podcast, telling people how he survived the war, he got struck with a missile.
Oh my.
Yeah. People only got 3 minutes to listen to you, so you gotta, that's what they told me in journalism, is put all the important details at the front, at the top, and then as you go down, put the minor details, because people don't read all of the whole article. So when you're gonna lie big, you gotta lie big at the start, and then you can have all your lesser lies at the bottom.
But nowadays, you can get away with just headlines.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this was the best headline I've seen. So, you know the Zaporizhia power plant that got attacked? You probably don't.
No.
Okay, last week. So Russia's been in control of this power plant for a while. And the Ukrainians attacked it. And I don't know if they completely took it out of service or what. But there was a headline saying, it was like, Zaporizhia power plant damaged in Russian attack. That was the headline.
So it's an attack on Russia?
Well, Russian held territory in Ukraine.
Oh.
But they say in Russian attack, and so it's ambiguous as to whether... And then in the text, it tells you that Ukraine launched the attack on the Russian-held power plant.
Oh.
I don't know how they get away with that.
Yeah, I don't know. News headlines are pretty much like tabloid headlines. Like now, right? Like, so-and-so is breaking up with long time. You know, and it turns out they just had a fight or something.
Well, that's what happens when all the journalists are women. I've been looking at recently goofy things journalists do when it comes to like guns, and really it's not just the journalists. Like, I'm sure you've seen like the, I want to say it was CNN or somebody who they did a picture of like a bullet shot through a window, and they actually stuck the whole cartridge, brass and all, into the window. To be like, oh, look, this was what the this is the ammo they were firing, not realizing that guns don't fire the whole cartridge.
Oh,
yeah. That's a they have some like where the people are actually blundering, but the journalists don't realize it. And so I saw recently it was a guy in the Navy. I guess he was like some commander or something.
Oh, I think I saw this too. It's with his sight.
Yeah, he put his scope on backwards, and he was looking out into the ocean. And if you ever look down the scope backwards, it just makes everything look farther away. So, like, how incompetent are you? First of all, for the guy doing it to not realize, but then also the journalist is like, I guess I can excuse the journalist there. There's another one. There was a Marble Falls, Texas, I think. There was a woman who was a cop, and she was part of this shooting, and she had her magazine, her 30-round magazine for her AR in backwards.
Oh. Oh my gosh.
So I don't know, it's just kind of funny that they publish it, and the journalist doesn't even realize anything's weird because they don't know enough about guns. And
do you know what a barrel shroud is?
Particular time. I actually don't know what a barrel shroud is.
Okay, because it's in your legislation.
It's a shoulder thing that goes up.
No, it's not.
150 million people have been killed since 2007 when Bernie voted to exempt the gun manufacturers from liability.
There's been a lot of people that have been shot by an unloaded gun.
If you want to protect yourself, get a double barrel shotgun.
That prohibit hunting ducks with more than 3 rounds, and yet it's legal to hunt humans.
They're going to shoot them. And so if you ban them in the future, the number of these high-capacity magazines is going to decrease dramatically over time because the bullets will have been shot and there won't be any more available.
Incendiary device on the tip of it, which is a heat-seeking device.
You do a great job of focusing on these single things when we really
need
to have
facts? Yeah, that is kind of my trade.
Facts.
Yeah. Yeah, see, on the people involved side of this thing, maybe not the Navy officer so much, it could be a random mistake or it could be incompetence. But the journalist part and then some of these people's part, I guess it's people more often just live in a sort of bubble where they get shielded from a lot of normal real-life things, like operation of a gun, like, you know, just something that would be a skill taken for granted in eras past. All right.
Have you ever seen the video of the girl who, like, she's filling up her car and
oh my God.
The thing that clicks off the gas pump doesn't click off?
Oh.
Nicole!
It's a video. She's holding the gas thing and it's squirting out gas. And there's like a puddle 2 inches of gas on the ground.
What do I do with it?
And like, so first of all, you didn't know how to unclick off the hold open latch.
Yeah.
And second of all, the thing you decided to do when everything was going wrong was to film yourself doing that.
Yeah. Oh gosh. And she's paying for that gas too.
Yeah. At least it shuts off at $100 a lot of times anyway.
Oh yeah.
Which doesn't get you a full tank anymore, but
yeah. But you know, if the sort of little practical skills of life, if you don't care to adopt them, then they're going to become your enemy, right? And you end up paying for it, well, in this case, literally. But like it ends up being a big, you know, if you lose.
You know, that's a good point. People have relied on specialization of the workforce to in order to get greater and better things done because everybody can't do everything.
Yeah. But
we've gotten to the point where that's the norm. So now everybody's used to not being able to do everything that they used to be able to do. And so like it's, yeah. We just come to accept it that, I build houses, but I'm not a roofer. So I'm going to call a roofer when I have a roof leak or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like,
much less fix a car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty much everybody just takes their car to get oil changed from a service instead of changing it themselves.
I changed my oil like a week or two ago. And I was like, so last time I jacked up my car, I had it fall off the jack because I jacked it up onto some soil that I thought was hard, but it was actually moist.
Yeah.
And so the jack shifted and it fell off the jack. And I was like, man, I don't want to do that while I'm under it. And then I just look at my car and I'm like, you know what? I can change the oil without jacking it up.
Yeah.
Like some cars, you know, they're too tight, but people don't even ask themselves that. They just go and they take it to the quick lube guy who.
Yeah, yeah. It's, when it's you know, just a you know, unscrew the.
You unscrew the two things. Yep. Can you unscrew that's it, that's two it. Things? You're going to spend $30 in parts, but you're going to save $40. So.
More than that, depending upon where you live, again.
Yeah. I don't see how they can justify charging people $40 for what they can do in 5 minutes. But I guess it's all the business taxes that they have to pay just to operate.
Well, again, you know, they hold a monopoly on certain practical skills. An effective monopoly because there's so many people who want an oil change.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because I had a dryer go out. And I was like, well, I got to get a new dryer. I was like, what do normal people do when their dryer goes out? Because I just muscle my dryer out of my house and put a new one in. But part of it is a lack of community, so we don't have a friend that can help us. But also, like, do you just always hire a fix-it man to come and install basic things? Like, all you have to do is unscrew, like, I guess with a dryer, there's like three things to unscrew.
I think a lot of times, if you buy, especially if you buy a new dryer, they'll send it out for you, and they'll send a guy out for you, which of course means it's incorporated into the cost of the dryer.
Oh, you mean they'll install it for you too?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't even think to ask about that.
Yeah, well, it probably depends on where you go, and you know, if you buy a new one for whatever it costs. Explicit.
I remember when I was younger, I was over at my uncle's house, and he's kind of upper middle class, lives in the city kind of guy, and he had like a leak on his toilet, wasn't holding water in the back,
mm-hmm.
and he went to the hardware store and he bought the stuff and he fixed it, and mm-hmm. I helped him fix it, and I was just like, wow, this was not something I was expecting you to be able to do, because he works in like the tech sector, and I don't know a whole lot about his work history, but yeah, he just went and he fixed his toilet, and I'm like, you know, yeah, it's kind of basic, but the people that are coming out now are not the kind that would do that. They would just go and they would hire somebody to come out and do that, because I know he could afford it. He could afford to get somebody to do that, but he was raised to just fix it.
It would be good if we all had that kind of skill to be able to maintain our
own. Why do
you think
it is that people lack, I don't know, the know-how or the drive to go and do things that are the basic things that they need done for themselves? Why do they go and they have a specialist go do it?
Well, I guess it's in a big way cultural, right? It's that's what you watch everybody else do. Everybody else seems to lack the confidence, and so why should you have the confidence to do it?
Oh, it could be that confidence.
Yeah. And then especially if your parents don't show you, which a lot of people's parents don't show them because they don't know.
Yeah, but like,
you know, like
our parents didn't have YouTube and they were fixing cars, you know.
Right.
Now you can find a specific video on how to do it.
Yeah, but with a car, I guess I can see people being a little bit apprehensive, because if you do something wrong, you might be out of car, or at least it takes something pretty bad to be out of car, right? But if you let's say you change the oil, you didn't put the oil plug in back the right way, you know,
okay,
it leaks.
Yeah.
Then, but you probably see it leaking.
I mean, you'd hope that you'd see it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I always check the next day, but.
Yeah, but you know, there's a sense to, if you see someone do it, and it becomes part of the normal world, then it's part of the normal world.
Well, how about like mowing your yard? How many people hire out to mow their yard who have like a kid in their family that could push a push mower?
Yeah.
So like. Because maybe they think that they're doing their kid a service by hiring the yard guy to go and mow their yard, but like you're just teaching your kid nothing.
Yeah,
he's gonna grow up without any ability, because you've told him that somebody else should mow the yard.
Do you think to some extent there's a slow loss of these sort of skills? You know, parents don't make their kids mow the lawn, and then kids think, well, this is just the way you do it, is you hire somebody to do it. But then you go up to more, in a way, advanced skills, because mowing the lawn's pretty easy to figure out and pretty easy to do. But you go back to, say, fixing a car or basic plumbing inside, you know, putting in a new sink or that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you lose sort of those skills one by one, because wonder,
like, it's,
if there's an element,
something like it's just maybe a lack of confidence, because a lot of these things are more intuitive than not.
Yeah, and also I guess people crowd up their lives with a bunch of stuff.
It gets me when people say they're gonna go work out, and then they're gonna say it's too much work to hoe my garden. I'm big into being fit, but it's too much work to pull the plants around the vegetables that I'm growing, so that. So you want to be healthy, but you don't want to have any idea where your food comes from, and you're too lazy to work on growing stuff, but you're not too lazy to go and run 5 miles.
Yeah, well, you could have two in one, you know, because there is some degree of physical work in maintaining a garden. But, you know, you could use half your time on that and half your time on running 2 miles. But no.
Yeah, I just don't get it. Like, I guess it's vanity, really, because maybe you don't want
There again, we have to. There are a lot of things to look into here, and one of them is, you know, the number of people who don't own enough land to even put up a garden is much increased. And so,
people who rent and stuff.
Yeah.
But even the smallest yard could have something.
Oh yeah, yeah. But the city population.
Yeah, there are a lot of people renting and. So.
Yeah, yeah, we're buying an apartment that's in just the middle of a building.
Yeah, and does that not count as renting?
Well, it's basically a similar arrangement, but then you're not paying rent every, I guess.
Yeah. I guess. Do they get to decide when they want to demolish that building?
I don't know. Yeah, that could be.
Well, the first floor decided he didn't want it anymore, so he poured water on the walls. So.
Well, it was a good run.
He's decided to scrap the I-beams.
Yeah, so second floor's out of luck. Yeah, but... And then people in the city often don't own cars. And so you lose some of that. And
so you're saying that life has become... I guess so hospitable that you don't need to know it, and so where there's no necessity, there's no motivation.
Yeah, maybe that's a part of it, and especially, you know, these days, you move out of your parents' house, you get an apartment usually, and only then later do you find some way to, especially people who go to college, and that's an even different system where they go to a dorm room with a cafeteria. You don't even cook. And you don't even have space to cook if you wanted to, unless you're lucky enough to have a dorm kitchen. And then you go to an apartment somewhere, and only later do you figure out where you're going to get a house and live, much less build a house. By the time you have an apartment, you call the maintenance people when something goes wrong. So when you get a house, you know, maybe
it's just the next logical step.
Yeah. Yeah, you just look for the maintenance people for that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. To some degree, I think there are a lot of people who aren't being lazy, but don't know and don't realize how much they could know.
Yeah.
Because it gets enculturated.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can see that with cars and stuff, but.
Yeah.
I guess I think what it came from is we were so specialized in the workforce that that the specialization made us neglect the mundane.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're a farmer, you have to do a lot of different things to make a farm go, and that's all part of the work. But if you're
at least in the past, but now they've I don't know.
Now it's machine farming. Yeah.
Machine farming. But,
yeah. Yeah, but you know, if you're a teacher, you don't have to do nearly so many things. You know,
I was thinking about
Now we're going to get taken off the internet because I insulted teachers.
You're going to think this is funny. I was realizing that, like, okay, so my teachers in high school, who taught like the sciences or whatever, and the higher level sciences for high school, all they really had to know was like one textbook, and which is wild to think about, because they're teaching like two classes, so maybe two textbooks. Okay, they need to know two textbooks, and they're having all the kids learn like 7 different subjects, a different one every year, and our teacher knows one textbook, teaches it every year. Like, you could be pretty dumb and still be teaching like an upper level science class because that's all you know. But because they're teaching you that upper level science class and it's something you don't know, you get the opinion of them that they're educated and know a lot about things that they have no qualification to know anything about.
Yeah.
And this particular teacher I'm thinking of, she would talk about how like she was so excited for the park tax and stuff, that and like different things pushing the students to become little socialists. And I'm like, you know, it kind of makes sense now that it wasn't because you were good at chemistry that you became a teacher. It was because you managed to learn one book and now you got a job paying you better than the average American.
Yeah. Well, the unfortunate part about high school teachers, especially of the sciences, is you can make more in a lot of places besides being a high school teacher. So you get, one, the people who are passionate about it, and two, the people who want to do only a little bit of work and, you know, have 3 months off in the year. And so, you know, who do you bet you get?
Well, in a given, there's a, I think there's a push to hire women.
Yeah, well, maybe in some respect, but also if you're a man, you're going to look for more money and to more be able to provide more.
Maybe, but teachers get paid pretty good. They always like to say they don't, but
they get paid okay, but you can do better. If you take a non-teaching profession, at least that's what I've heard.
Okay, I can use my sister as an example. I think she gets paid like $45,000 or something, and then that was like her third year of teaching, and after that it's going to be $50,000.
Yeah.
And find me a job where she could work, where she could get paid more than that. I don't think there is one.
Really?
I mean, how many people are going to hire women who it's not like she's built to do any real work.
Yeah, I have seen, you're right, I've seen a job post saying, you know, must be able to lift over 50 pounds.
And it's, well, even if she could lift over 50 pounds, it's not like she's living in California. She's living in small town United States where the average person salary was like $20,000 in the county. The household income's like $30,000 or something, but the average person was 22 or so, 25. I think it was that, 25. Mm-hmm. It's all public numbers. You can look it up.
Yeah.
And teachers get paid way more than the average person.
Yeah. Oh, that's for sure.
Well, that's the thing, is that you don't have to be a brilliant person to get this job. It's you can be an average person and get a teaching job. And so it's just, as I was telling you earlier, it's a government form of welfare, is to take these people that can't, you know, they're not worth what they're getting paid because they couldn't get paid in any other sector that. But the government's paying them that so that, you know, the government.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It perpetuates people who are to have government education is what the government wants, because it encourages people to not think so much about
it's critically just a part of the propaganda machine. You can get the people to agree with you, and when you have a democracy, it matters.
Although I heard a quote recently from Mark Twain. He said, if voting made a difference, they wouldn't let you do it.
Yeah. It's kind of true.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, when you control the press, I mean, go look up who controls all the press.
Yeah, you know, there's an article recently, a whistleblower at NPR said that in 2022, they had 87 Democrats and 0 Republicans on the news team.
Okay.
Which surprises nobody, but
it surprises me that they don't have some token registered Republican.
Yeah, some places do.
It's not hard to register. It's not like one person's going to make a difference. So.
Yeah. Just well, they did. Register. I guess they didn't feel it even. I guess they didn't feel they even needed to do that.
Yeah.
But, National Public Radio, 87 Democrats, no Republicans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to PBS and find out it's the same.
Yeah. Which you know, at this point, I don't know why anybody wants to be associated with the Republican Party.
But. It's complicated. It did
get so lesser of two evils.
Yeah, lesser the caboose of two evils. I mean, pretty much just getting dragged along. Well, and also there's a sense of not. I think it develops more and more of people not wanting to get their hands dirty, and literally, and in a certain just. But you actually don't get much reward in life unless you get your hands dirty, literally and otherwise, and metaphorically. You know, if you're not actually, at least if you're a man, you know, if you're called to build something for your family, then it does feel a lot better to be able to actually build that instead of, well, you know, I did a paperwork job that allowed me to get enough money to pay somebody else to have done it.
Right. Yeah. I guess we don't realize that all of us have a calling to do work.
Mm-hmm.
Like when God put man in the garden, he put him there to tend it. And so, if you're just going around and having all your needs met without you having to do anything, you're missing out on that calling in life, and you're probably don't feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
I can't see how.
Well, that thing is people rarely think, you know, what does God want me to do in any given moment? What is because that's really what it means to think what's the best thing to do or what's the right thing to do is what does God want me to do? Somehow it's more clarifying thinking that way than it is in any of these other terms. Somehow, and then you know, the thing about God is he'll let you get distance from him. You know, if you don't care to think about what God wants from you, it's not like he's going to
it's not gonna fall in your lap.
It's not like he's going to force you to be nearby except through punishment to try to bring you back.
Yeah.
Right. Well, in a sense, like you can walk away from God.
You can
walk your way to hell.
And if you don't seek, how do you expect to find?
Yeah. Yeah, so in terms of a calling, a calling to work.
It seems to me, though, that you know, when you bring God into the question, you know, people will quote St. Augustine and say he said, maybe it was like, love your neighbor and do whatever you want. I think he said something like that.
Wait, what?
Love your neighbor.
Did he say that?
Love your neighbor and do whatever you want, or it was something like that. Or,
did he say that before or after his conversion?
It was after his conversion, because the whole of the law can be summed up into love God above all things and love your neighbor as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at it that way, then you're just like, well, why do I have to work? Because I'm not hurting anybody. And you fail to think about who you could be helping.
Yeah.
And so as Catholics, we say, you know, I'm keeping the commandments. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. But Christ will tell you, I was hungry and you didn't give me any food.
Yeah.
And as conservatives, we're just like, well, those lazy people, they deserve to starve, you know, because that's what the Republican Party wants you to think, is that all the immigrants into the country, they're just here to sell us dope, and they'd be back in Colombia working hard if they were hardworking Colombians, you know? And the homeless people, too, you know? It's not just you get to ignore your fellow man because your charity could be abused. You know, because yeah, your charity can be abused, but you still you still have to decide whether they're going to abuse it or not. It's not just everybody who's in a desperate situation is going to be swept under the rug because you don't like some of the people in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not, you can't let suspicion of some mean, okay, charity's out, because that's no way to interpret things. You know, just because some people might abuse charity doesn't mean you root it out. Because it is still a good thing to help the poor. And so if you can find a way to help them, then that would be a good thing to do. And if you can't find a way to help them,
I guess we gotta find a balance between helping the needs of their body and helping, you know, the needs of their soul.
Yeah.
Because if the health of their body is harming the health of their soul, as in, let him who would not work not eat. That's what St. Paul says. If there's a man out there who's taking advantage of you, who has a sign saying "Give me free money because I'm poor," and you just say, "Okay, here's your free money," you're not helping the man.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true. I don't know, but how do you know in that moment? How do you figure that out?
How do you know if somebody's taking advantage of you?
Yeah,
you got to be prudent. You don't want to guess.
Yeah,
it takes some real world prudence to be able to figure that out. But you can't just dismiss everybody who asks for you, because God says to us, give to everybody who asks. And to the one who demands your cloak, don't deny him your tunic. And that's very radical.
It is.
Because we want to say, you know, well, the beggars in the world, you know, we want to impose some flaw on them, and then use that as justification for closing our hearts to them.
Yeah. Yeah, if they get money, it's just going to go to this bad thing, and then.
Yeah, which wasn't what we were told to do. We were told, give to whoever asks of us. We were also told, let him who does not work not eat. You know, and those things aren't contradictions.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you said, prudence, but not prejudice, and not in either direction. Not, you know, not assuming, oh, they're asking, so I'm just going to give, but also not assuming, well, if they're out there, you know, there's so much.
Well, that's the
so
thing, is because when you give somebody something, it's not all. If it's not to their benefit, you're not really giving.
Yeah.
But as St. Paul also says, Christ says, it is more blessed to give than to receive.
Yeah.
And it's more than just the tithe in church, I guess. You know, it's not just you come to church, you gave the church some money. Okay, that's what almsgiving is. It's more than that. You know, and I think a lot of times you might live in a nice community or whatever, and so you think, well, there's no poor people. Yeah. You remember the poor you will always have with you? They're somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you can do good for them whenever you want. And your excuses don't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, because back to
how we were talking about skills, you know, it might not just be a lack of food or whatever. It could just be like, you know, with a lot of younger people, they don't know how to do any of this stuff. And you might. So you can go show them something.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be the best thing you can do, because a lot of young people. Well, it's not easy to build a livelihood. Never has been, still isn't. Even if it's easier than it was in some, if comparative sense, before. And so, you know, you help young people build a livelihood by sharing skills.
Yeah.
That'll be a good thing.
Yeah. You know, I think our generation compares to the last generation, and we like to say, well, they had it easier or whatever. Yeah. And they did have it easier. Back then, their money was backed by the gold standard and stuff. The country didn't have these policies to ensure that you never got a piece of property and stuff. Unless you were black, in which case it did. But
40 acres and a mule.
What's that from?
Post-Civil War. Every free black person got 40 acres and a mule.
Oh.
Is what they were advertising it, at least. I don't know how many of them got it.
Who supplied the mules?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's the other thing about almsgiving, is it's not almsgiving if it's other people's stuff. That's theft. That's what communism is. When you give other people stuff, that's theft. So if you have a bunch of mules you want to give to all the black people, go for it.
Yeah, but let's just not let us develop prejudice against poor or rich people, right? Because the poor people aren't necessarily panhandling to support drug habits or whatever, you know, excuse you want to assign to why they might not deserve charity. And rich people aren't necessarily hoarders. Some of them are, but we can judge that on, like, right, like we can say that on an individual level, right? And not just a, or maybe even a group level, but with a sense of, you know, you can tell that a lot of rich people are hoarding things, but without pointing fingers, unless you have a specific finger to point, right? But not a blanket, all poor people are poor by choice, or all rich people are hoarders.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe you could a little bit more easily make a case for rich people being hoarders, because if you have a certain amount, you probably.
Well, I guess. But then all I can say is it's harder for a rich man to get to heaven than for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle.
Yeah.
And he wasn't talking about some little gate in Jerusalem. That's the dumbest thing people came up with.
Oh,
he was just talking where he had to put a camel through and he had to bend down on his legs and crawl through. Like, no. That's dumb. Otherwise, everybody could be rich. Because it's not hard to get a camel through through a gate in Jerusalem. And there are rich saints, and you have to look at them. They lived as though not having.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. A poverty of spirit is not necessarily whether it's not a number in your bank account.
Yeah.
You know, you might say that you're poor because you don't have any money in your bank account, but if your quality of life, you're living in affluence and not working, then you're rich. And on the other hand, you might have a big number in your bank account, but if you're living, you know, not just indulging your body in all the worldly pleasures that you can come up with and ignoring your fellow man, then you might be living, you know, in poor in spirit.
Yeah.
And you might. And if you notice, a lot of the saints that were canonized that were rich, they're like kings or something. And king is he's rich. He's got all the power, but those kings were using their power to further God's kingdom.
Yeah.
Giving away your ability to do stuff is not necessarily always a good thing to do. You know, it can be a very good thing to sell your property and give to the poor, but obviously it wouldn't make sense for all of us to do that, because then nobody has any property except heathens.
Yeah.
Then we're all poor. So to make
let's Catholics give away all our property so that everybody else can have it, and we can support the poor, right?
Yeah, but to look at it from like what's best for society. That's what a king is supposed to do, and it's not best for society if he just gave away all his power to help the immediate need of some random person now.
Yeah.
And so that's why they still have that poverty of spirit. Those kings who use their wealth for God, he didn't use it for himself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is more about use than it is about just simple possession. And if you're able to use the resources of society, it doesn't matter whether you have a large number in your bank account. You know, if like you said, if one's able to be affluent and
so many people seem to think that they get some poor points with God because they don't have any money, and it's like it doesn't count if you're not trying. You know, if you're not working an honest job and trying, and that's a good point, an honest job, because. Mm. Because people don't even ask that question anymore. They're just doing a job. But
yeah.
I remember reading, I want to say it was St. John Vianney, who said that a lot of people are guilty of stealing when they take their product to the marketplace and they advertise it as what it is not. When they advertise it as better than it actually is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, his example was somebody will ask you if this is fresh, and you'll say, oh, yes, it's fresh, but it really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you just stole from them because they bought something under a lie.
Yeah.
And
that's back before expiration dates. Now we have expiration dates to tell us.
and God's gonna judge you for those, what you consider a small lie. He's going to judge you for that until you restore that loss to the owner as best as you can, which is a lot of things people don't realize about, you know, confession. It's not just you get to go tell your sin to the priest and voila, you're get to go to heaven now. Mm-hmm. You get to tell your sins to the priest and you got to do all that's in your power to make it better.
Yeah, well, you have to be sincerely sorry, right? And who would be sincerely sorry and also thinking, well, but I get to keep this money?
Yeah, I'm sorry I stole it, but...
Yeah.
That was then. That is done. but
what's done is done.
But, you know, this, John Vianney was also talking, like, it's... You might think that you're being generous by giving... Let's say you're the steward of a rich guy, and you give money to some poor person. If you do that unauthorized, then you stole from the rich guy. And that's still theft. It doesn't matter if he's Bill Gates or a poor guy. If you stole from him, you stole from him.
No. Yeah, that's not to be taken lightly.
Yeah. And back to honest work a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we doing work that's good, or are we doing work that's bad? How do we answer that question?
I think most people take work these days out of habit. You know, their parents did whatever they did, and now that it's like, oh. Go to college, in some cases, is the advice. Some cases not. And then just, you know, get a job and do whatever makes you happy. And, well, then you discover later that getting a job and doing whatever makes you happy, that really isn't that, you know, you really aren't meant to find all your happiness in a job anyway. And so then you just settle for whatever you can get. And so people, it's not, I guess, a question of good or bad because of habit. It's just get a job.
Well, but it should be a question of good and bad, and how do we answer that?
It is a moral act to work well, and it is a moral act to do bad work.
Yeah. I think what I find is that. I have moral objections to a lot of the jobs that are posted, you know, because like, and it's because of how wicked our society is. you know, can you get a job at a retail, like Dollar General or something, and not mm-hmm. be selling birth control to yeah. your customers? Like, I'm not comfortable doing that.
You know, there's a quick shop in a college, where in the college town that I live nearby. So I just stopped in at this quick shop, and right next to cold medications and, you know, and basic hygienic items, they have birth control. I'm like, what? This shop has hardly anything but food and little, you know, and like they're going to, with their tiny behind the counter display, they're just going to pick cold medications, paper towels, and birth control. That's it.
There's a joke that Gabriel Iglesias does. He says, "So he was going to the aisle in the store, and I don't know what he was looking for, but he there were like condoms, and then there was pregnancy tests, and then there were diapers. It's like, is this the order that this is the order that people need them in?"
Oh my gosh.
But that's a real thing. Like, how can you be a Catholic receptionist, you know, what do you call them? Store clerk. And
yeah.
You're checking people out and they got a box of condoms and some sex toys. That's not good work.
Yeah.
And no. it's unfortunate for the people who feel like they're forced to be in that position. But uh-huh. but I guess it takes a leap of faith that you're going to be all right when you quit that job, because yeah. you're not going to put up with that.
Yeah.
Because you can't, you know, the devil's always going to make you think that you're not going to be able to serve God.
Yeah.
That God's not protecting you. But if you're going to live by his commandments, you know, not a hair on your head's going to be harmed. And you got to believe that.
Yeah. The calling of God will never require you to do something that's morally questionable like that, morally wrong, you know, to abet people.
Well, a lot of people are going to say, oh, well, the store sells a lot of good things, you know, and as it is, you'll go to the stores, you know, and so, okay, well, good people go to the stores because there aren't any other stores.
Mm-hmm.
So what, do we have to boycott everything?
Well, but if people didn't go to stores that... If a store opened that didn't sell such things, and people were to make a concerted effort to go to that store above the others because it didn't, then it would really, we could actually encourage businesses not to do that. We just don't. We don't bother.
Yeah. And then there's other businesses like liquor stores or whatever, and you're just like, you know, alcohol's not bad, but what do they say? It's like the top 10% of drinkers drink 90% of alcohol, or 100%. It's absolutely ridiculous. Maybe it's the top 1% drink like 50% of the alcohol.
It's like having cases of beer, having bottles of wine. That's okay. But having aisles full of whiskey and vodka, that's not going to a good place. You know, like most of that's not going to a good place.
Some of it is, but
some of it is.
But
that's not bad. But aisles and aisles full of it?
Yeah. And I don't know. There's a law on the books in Kentucky, at least, that you can't sell to publicly known drunks, you know? But the liquor store doesn't care. They're just going to say, oh, well, it wasn't publicly known, you know?
Yeah. How many publicly known drunks are there? How many people... Well, how much does the community keep track of people enough to know who's a drunkard?
Yeah.
And the answer is not at all, because we've, I guess love our neighbor, people generalize that so much that they forgot it also is specific to, you know, have a neighborhood of
people. Well, and it's a little bit of a libertarian thing just saying that it's none of our business what our neighbor's doing. But you are your brother's keeper, and if you go to work and you just sell him his vices, is that a good job? You know, because you know, if it weren't for that, I think selling alcohol is a pretty cool job, or making it or whatever they're doing. But if you know that that's how it's going to be used, is that really a good job?
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you decided to open a liquor store and you decided to have a healthy approach to things where you weren't where you were encouraging people to not be drunks, yeah, I think it could be done right.
Yeah.
But I think the low level jobs, you're probably not.
Yeah, probably not. People in stores will sort of admit to vices without even knowing about it. Like, I was in a pharmacy, it was just this morning, and it had an aisle that said family planning. And it's like, that's supposed to be the nice version of saying contraception, right? But it's still admitting to something that's immoral, because you don't plan your family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes me think of what I told you the other day. We're going to
hold off on that miracle from God. Yeah. You know, we don't want the miracle yet. We'll take it. We'll take it later, maybe, yeah, or not at all. You know, because we get to plan this.
Yeah, we're not gonna be celibate or anything. We're just gonna have it our way. But it makes me think of, there's the pro-life people and there's the pro-choice people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really like the title of either of those people. We should have the pro-murder people and the anti-murder people. That's what we should call it. Like,
yeah.
Stop saying you're pro-life. I mean, that's stupid. Everybody, like, yeah, I'm pro-life, I guess, but it's I'm mad because they're killing people. I'm not mad because they're anti-life. You know, it's a vaguer way of putting it.
Well, I don't know. There are people who are anti-life these days, at least philosophically.
Well, they are, but it's more vague.
Yeah.
You know,
I haven't watched the video, but I heard about it. You know the guy, Bill Maher, the...
I heard of liberal, him.
Yeah, liberal nighttime host, but he'll say things in a more direct way than other liberals will. He said that that pro-life people are calling it murder, abortion. And he said, and it kind of is, but there are 8 billion people on this planet, and we're not going to miss you.
Yeah, you know, it's... okay.
Yeah, it's pro-murder, anti-murder. That's it.
Yeah. Everything else is a euphemism.
Yeah.
I don't care what the daddy did. It's, you know, the baby didn't do nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Killing innocent life. Turns out to never be the answer.
Well, there was that whole crucifixion thing that kind of saved humanity, but...
Yeah, I don't think it worked out well for the people who did it. Except for that one guy who said this truly was the Son of God. Maybe it worked out well for him, but I don't know. The Good Thief. It did work pretty well for the Good Thief.
You know, he wouldn't have gotten to paradise that day if he didn't steal anything.
well, we talked about the
importance of work a little bit. But have we ever talked to, you know, about people making work their God?
Yeah, that's because, just what I was thinking.
And progress their God, or, you know, like, because it might not just be work itself. It might just be accumulating wealth or whatever it is. It's because work is it's given for us to because, you know, we are a body and a soul, and it helps our body, and in turn helps our soul.
Yeah.
But you're not just your body, and so if you focus just on work and neglect your soul, I don't know. I guess I think about the Benedictines a little bit, who their motto is ora et labora, pray and work, and they spend, you know, they might spend half their day working, but the other half the day they spend praying.
Mm-hmm.
And prayer is always, you know, it comes first. Ora, pray, and then work. You know, it's
Yeah, but you reverse the order and you get worship of work, and that's not healthy. And you see that especially in the way that then there's there's also not a healthy sense of rest, which is in part prayer and in part something like keeping Sunday holy. A lot of also, another moral.
That's a good way to know if you worship your work is if you deny God Sunday.
Yeah.
Because God demands that you don't work on Sunday, and if you choose to deny Him that, you're stealing from Him, because you owe Him that.
Yeah.
And there's that provision for necessary work, and.
Mm.
And you know the verse in Leviticus where the person was gathering wood, and mm-hmm. and because he was working on the Sabbath, they stoned him.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people will say, oh, gathering wood is necessary work. I'm heating my house. But he wasn't gathering wood for that day. He was storing it up for the winter. Oh, but I have to get wood by the winter. But, that should be where you draw the line of necessary work. Because, sufficient for a day is the evil thereof. You shouldn't be worrying about what you need to do the next day on a Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. And, in this day and age, something like a power plant that needs operators constantly, right? So somebody works there. People are on life support in the hospital. People depend on energy in the winter.
But even there, you shouldn't be doing your maintenance to your power plant.
Yeah.
You should minimize the amount of work that you have to do on Sunday. Like, you can't just not feed your animals. Go feed your animals, but don't be repairing the barn.
One or two guys. We as a my family, it's just small things, but you don't mow the lawn, you don't do things that you could have done on a different day on Sunday. So honestly, I wonder if you had a completely Catholic society, if you were to have like
monastery, not just you're not working, you're also not making other people work for you.
Yeah, so you're not going to a restaurant.
Yeah, you're not going out to any form of entertainment where somebody's going to have to go work because of you, and conduct business. I hate bringing up the Orthodox Jews because they're not really the keeper of any truth anymore, but I saw on a website that was Jewish, they said, we don't take orders on Saturday, so wait till tomorrow. And I'm like, what? That, I respect that. I don't really view it as work to buy something on the internet on a Sunday because they're not going to do anything with it until Monday anyway. But...
Yeah.
You're just talking to a computer.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't be trading in stocks and stuff, you shouldn't be,
Yeah, you shouldn't.
And, and pursuing business endeavors.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess the way you in a sense, is intent. If you're kind of itching to get to all your worldly life, and away from the things of God on Sunday, rather than wanting the chance to spend time with God on Sunday and sort of being pulled away by necessity. Yeah, there's a difference.
There's a quote from a saint, I can't remember who it was, and he said, if every man should pray an hour a day unless he's busy, and then he should pray 2 hours a day.
Oh, that's a good one.
And, the first time I heard that, I was like, that's stupid, because if you're busy, you can still pray an hour a day. That makes sense. But when you're busy, you're more likely to get caught up in the things of the world and forget God.
Mm.
And so when you're busy, it's all the more important that you give God even, and you're going to need more things from God, more grace from God to handle all the things that you have to do.
Yeah. Okay.
It's funny, because we say don't be busy, and then we're going to say don't be idle, and how do we just walk this straight and narrow path, There's that big, big broad one that doesn't have any of these rules that we could walk, and the people there are happy.
Yeah. Yeah, they're getting their rewards right now.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
When I was translating Anthony Claret, he has a part where he's talking about mortal sin, and he says, when you're not in mortal sin, when you're in a state of grace, you're all the trials and crosses that you carry merit you reward in heaven. But when you're in mortal sin, they can't merit you heaven because you're going to hell if you die. And so, but God's still just, and so he doesn't just, you know, throw away you know, all your good works, but they're dead, and so they just merit you good on earth.
Oh, I see.
And how much better would it be for you to merit stuff in heaven? You know, and that's something my dad would always tell me, you know, when I'm working or whatever, just, you know, offer up these little things for the poor souls in purgatory. And so, you know, when you're working, you're thinking about that, because there's a lot of times work sucks.
Yeah.
But if you're not carrying your cross, it sucks more.
Yeah, it's true. Because you don't have a larger purpose than that sort of.
Well, your soul can feel that you're not doing what it should be.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's you can tell when you're farther away from God, I think, and when you're closer.
Yeah, that's why psychology is so ridiculous, is because they have to go off this assumption that your soul doesn't exist. You know, this is the study of your soul, your psyche.
Yeah, secular psychology makes no sense.
Yeah, this is the study of your soul. By the way, you don't have one.
Yeah, what's the root word of psychology again? Oh yeah, the Greek psyche, which is the psyche, which is
soul.
So soul. Soulology. I guess that makes it solipsismology.
Yeah. I saw the other day, like the origins of the alphabet.
Oh yeah.
And so there's a book called A is for Ox, because apparently the letter A used to be the pictogram of the ox, but then it got twisted around, and somehow the Phoenicians, we got it from. Well, like the Phoenicians got it from the Hebrews, or, you know, the Greek or whatever. It actually came from Hebrew after it came from Egyptian.
Because the Egyptians had a bunch of hieroglyphs and then some alphabetic characters for when they didn't have hieroglyphs.
Yeah.
And that spread up the Levant, and then the Phoenicians took it everywhere.
Which makes alpha, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
Aleph, alpha, and then alphabet, and whatever. But I guess where I was going with this, because it's off topic, but so those letters used to be pictures and had like a meaning behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen Protestants do it, but Catholics don't really do it anymore. But they would take parts of Scripture, and especially the Psalms, and we would like look at, because there's definite letter play in the Psalms. And they would look at the meaning behind the letters in the Psalms.
Yeah.
And St. Jerome talks about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish I just knew more about that.
Yeah. Yeah. But some of the meaning, though, in the numbers in the Psalms, though, I take it is from just in Hebrew, they had numerical values assigned to them. Right? So the first 10 letters
were 1 through 10. Yeah, they also had numbers.
Yeah, and then it went up for the hundreds.
They were like Roman numerals, but more confusing.
Yeah. Yeah, math and Roman numerals is not intuitive. Like, oh, okay, so we take the V away from the X, then their V. But actually, there's a line in front of that because there was another I there.
Yeah, but like figuring it, oh, well, I don't remember the Hebrew. The Greek also had symbols of the numbers, didn't they? Or numbers for their letters.
Oh, they
did? Yeah, I think so. Because when you look up, you know, the number of his name is 666. There's a Greek system for counting that's pretty confusing, and you can like put in people's names who you think are the Antichrist, and figure out that they're not. Someone who...
there was someone who had like one of the titles of the Pope, and he took all the letters that corresponded in Roman numerals and added them up, and it came. Somehow he got it to come out to 666, but yes.
There's actually a lot of people who do come up with 666. If you try different variations, I wrote a program once, and I chucked in like all the billionaires because I assumed he had to be rich or something, and I got like 11 back or something.
Oh wow!
But that was because I think one version of Revelation it's 616, and the other version 666. So I don't know if it's like a clue that it's gonna add up to both, or if one of the translations is wrong. I don't know.
Or if they're gonna trick us by saying what would it be 641 plus or minus 25.
Well, then a lot of people add up to that.
Let's see. So if we put it through a quadratic formula, what equation does that give us?
Yeah. Well,
and people must have had in the year 666, there must have been a bit of tension.
Yeah, I bet there was.
Yeah.
Did you hear any of the people saying the solar eclipse was going to be doomsday?
Oh no, I didn't hear that this time.
I saw something that the last time there was an X over the U.S., 3 months later was the earthquake of 1812 or something. The great big one that made a lake and like flowed the Mississippi backwards and stuff.
Oh, that one
swallowed up some Indians. Yeah, that was... it makes me think a little bit though about do you remember how like Sister Faustina said, no, maybe it was Fatima, I think it was Fatima, said that at Fatima there was going to be a great fire in the sky before the punishment on the world, and then there was like a Northern Lights that appeared red throughout all of Europe and the U.S.
Oh.
Sister Lucia or somebody said that was that was the sign that and then World War II happened.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
So I've been waiting for it to happen for World War III, what with Iran and Israel and Russia and Ukraine and Germany and everybody wanting to, you know, it's easy to light a forest fire when everything's dry, but it's really hard to put it out.
Yeah, that's the thing, is there not enough put-outers in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, blessed are the peacemakers, which doesn't mean pacifists.
Yeah. Yeah, but peacemakers. Yeah. Not people who dumbly remain on the sidelines when they are needed.
Yeah. All right, so get out there and go do the good work.
Yeah.
I think that's about all I got.